This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is brought to you by Gamefly. Gamefly is a way to buy and rent all your favorite games while saving money. Go to Gamefly.com, pick your favorite games, and have them mailed directly to your door. Just go to Gamefly.com/scoop with an exclamation point and start your free premium 30-day trial today. Come get up. Beware, I live. IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis, Scoop. Brian Altano, Bruh. And Sam Claiborne.
Three scoops.
We've got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about Super Mario Odyssey.
Yes.
We're going to talk about shooter campaigns. But first, the plot thickens with the...
Like a stew.
Like a bloody, gory stew.
Wow.
The Evil Within 2 seems more and more likely.
Didn't think you were going that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Evil Within 2.
New info, you know, so Bethesda has not officially announced Evil Within 2, but many people think that will be one of the games that they're showing at E3 this year.
And QuakeCon.
And, well, QuakeCon comes later on in the year.
They gotta have something, right? They have this big press conference at E3.
At E3, yeah.
And then they have QuakeCon.
It feels like
if they don't have games that are Fallout or Skyrim, what are they gonna have with this? Mm-hmm.
Maybe they announce a game at E3, or have a trailer or something, then have a longer playable demo at QuakeCon.
So the new info this week is a job posting, a leaked job posting that was not meant, that was only meant to be seen internally in some job boards.
Mm-hmm. Did you apply?
That's a very rude question to ask. The supposedly leaked job posting is for Q&A and translation for The Evil Within 2. Mm-hmm. The game is named in the supposed leaked job listing. However, I might have another scoop for us. I use my investigative skills. Mm-hmm. And this job runs from April of this year to October 31st. The job ends October 31st.
Spooky.
Which, of course, is Halloween, which is a good time to release a horror game. And this year, October 31st is a Tuesday.
I don't get why they'd fire the person the day the game comes out.
Yeah, right. You would think that their work would end a month at least before the game came out, correct?
Yeah, they got to be working on that day one patch.
So
I don't know.
Is your theory that we're going to get the game this fall?
On October Halloween day, which is a Tuesday, which is when games come out here in the U.S.
It's got to be VR.
I'm totally down with that. That is awesome. That's a great idea.
I like Evil Within. It's a fun game. It's not as good as Resident Evil 7. Though.
That's the question I wanted to ask. What do we want from Evil Within 2 in a post-Resident Evil 7 world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I didn't play The Evil Within, but what I like about it or respect about it is it's filling a place in like survival horror that Resident Evil's kind of walked away from. They backed away from it, and this other franchise is there to sort of pick that up. And so that's cool that, like, you know, if Resident Evil's going to zig, then Evil Within can zag, and then both things can still exist.
Except I think
Resident Evil 7 sort of leaned back into that classic slower-paced survival horror.
Well, yeah, but, you know, first person, and yeah. I mean, it's a very different experience.
Mm-hmm. I will say that both games, when I finished them, I was like, I have no idea what just happened.
Yeah, totally.
Both those games like had completely indecipherable stories by the end of them. I really enjoyed both of them. I couldn't tell you what was going on by the end. What I really liked about The Evil Within were the settings versus Resident Evil, which were really a lot more grounded in reality. I mean, at the reality of a nightmare house full of mold people, but still a reality. But what I didn't like about The Evil Within was that there wasn't, like, I would kind of want a more of a kind of, like, Metroidvania feel that I think Resident Evil had, where it was this big interconnected house, whereas Evil Within, you would reach kind of like a point of no return where it didn't loop back on itself and you're just like, I'm in some crazy mountain area. Oh, and now I'm in a haunted house and now I'm in a cellar. Like, it was sort of...
That's the old Resident Evil... Or sorry, not old. Yeah. That's the middle Resident Evil period thing where you just... Like, 4, where you just start in one place, then you're like, I'm in a dam, then I'm in a mine, then I'm in a castle, then I'm in a crazy temple, and then I'm like, yeah, it's so...
Then you're on a jet ski.
Then you're on an island with, like, a tech lab, and then you're finally...
We Tango is a Shinji Mikami's company. Yeah, so, right. I mean, we just completely missed that part. Like, the godfather of survival horror, you know, not at Capcom
it's
and now, maybe.
All coming back to me now.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited for this. Again, like, there were parts of Evil Within where I was completely baffled by. There were some really annoying parts, but I liked the idea as a whole. I really liked the enemy design in that game and characters in general. Like, crafting was really cool. Like, the weapon stuff was great. And it actually had that survival horror element of, like, I'm limited on ammo and weaponry and stuff like that. So,
I will not play the sequel or the original.
You don't like spooky games?
Well, he just
doesn't like being spooky
games. Huh.
I didn't even like the spooky parts of Zelda. That's a pretty real spooky island up north.
Mildly spooky.
I have a funny story about The Evil Within.
Did you do that?
When Bethesda had their own booth at E3, the year that Evil Within was supposed to come out, and they had this giant brain there that is, I think, like a character or an iconography in the game.
Mother brain.
Yeah, it's like this big mother brain covered in, like, barbed wire, and they just put it in this, like, kind of, like, weird room area with this pulsing, screaming sound over it and this blaring lights. And there was this lady, I went up to do an appointment with the Bethesda booth to do, like, a booth tour video. And I walked up and I was like, hi, can I do, like, a booth tour? And she's like, what? And I was like, we want to just film around here. And she's like, I can't hear you, this screaming brain. And, like, she'd been there for, like, 3 days and she's been, like, light flashing. And she seemed really distraught. So
E3 is the same thing as Disneyland, where, like, somebody is hearing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
But E3 is only 3 days long, and I wonder how they can stand it. Like, I just have that Breath of the Wild music, like, constantly on loop from last year. Like, every time I hear it, like, kind of triggers these memories of being there. But I can't imagine the people that are hearing this.
No, I mean, we talked about,
like,
it.
You see that art installation, you're like, wow, look at that creepy screaming brain. But for her, she lived it.
She lived it for, like, 4 days.
And, like, even something idyllic and wonderful, like Nintendo's Zelda Takeover, like, I was in that booth for a while. And the sun rises and sets, and the music plays. And you're like, oh, it's so beautiful and wonderful. But if you heard that 45 times a day,
seriously, no. We told the story on Beyond this week about the DuckTales remaster that came out, and the people in the adjacent booths just had to hear dun 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 for 4 days straight, and just
so
there it is.
I'm getting to the point. How do people work at the Teacup Ride in Disneyland?
Yeah,
just playing that Very Merry on Birthday song. Over and over.
I mean, have you
probably
ever,
high like, turnaround. People who do it for like 6 months.
Long.
Yeah.
And then,
I think that's
or
it.
Or do they work in shifts? They only go out for half an hour and then they go to the churro cart.
And they go to like It's a Small World or like the, I don't know.
If you work at Disneyland and listen to Game Scoop, let us know.
Send me also,
I know people do because I got recognized at Disneyland actually. From
you got recognized?
Yeah, by a person working there.
Yeah, and
if you are listening,
if you're going to E3 this year, which you might be because 15,000 fans are, stand in one place for a long time and see how long you last.
Wait, did those tickets sell?
Oh, I haven't checked.
We'll check in.
Also, please just stand right in the middle of the concourse for people trying to walk.
Yep,
just stand right there
with your phone out.
Yeah,
we get our own version of that at the IGN booth because there's like this hardware manufacturer right next door to us that plays the same dubstep song on loop. Like
we do it to ourselves. We have this Live song. And it's like we'll be back in just a moment. Thanks, guys.
Why does that play on stage?
I don't know.
Just for people
but
listening,
they'll play it throughout the year, and I'll just kind of look up at Damon. And I'll just be like,
start shaking.
Yeah. What day is it?
Well, I don't know. I really liked Resident Evil 7.
Yeah.
That's sort of like repositioned the Resident Evil series in my mind as the the leading survival horror franchise. So I'd be very interested to see what The Evil Within 2 is all about.
Totally.
We'll see if that is announced at E3 this year.
Why do all those mold people have such great teeth?
In which game? In Resident Evil 7? Yeah.
That's a good question.
How do you know that if you didn't play it?
I think Kotaku wrote an article about it.
Oh,
and
really?
And once you see it pointed out, it's like they all have perfect mouths.
The black ooze creatures?
It's just the family.
Oh, the
it's
family.
It's a side effect of the treatment.
Because sure. I was going to say, I don't envision that family having great teeth before the black mold even happened.
But you know what happens when you remove their limbs? They just grow back. So maybe their teeth just grow back.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Maybe they already lost their teeth, and this is the new teeth.
Got it.
See?
Solved it.
You know when you die, your hair, teeth, and fingernails grow up to 4 feet long?
Your teeth grow 4 feet long.
You just told half a truth here.
Every variation of that's a myth.
Speaking of Resident Evil 7, one of our listeners, Eric Pereira, writes in to say, I have some concerns about the suspension of disbelief in video games.
Yeah.
He has some concerns. In Resident Evil 7, you can open doors from both sides by pushing it open, but this makes no sense because doors don't have 180-degree hinges.
Well, do you push
first of all, there are totally doors that can open from both sides.
Yeah, cool doors and bars.
Well, yeah, you know,
saloons.
Like, yeah.
That's it.
Like maybe at a restaurant. Rooms.
It's called a swinging door.
Well, that's a whole different thing. But sure,
cool thing.
All sorts of video games do stuff that facilitate you playing the game. They just like fix nuisances that we have to deal with in real life. Because like, why would we deal with that crap in a video game?
No, doors are universally terrible in video games. You open it and then like you get stuck on the edge of it, and sometimes you open it and you're stuck behind it, or you got a companion and they're stuck, and you got to shut the door and get them by the door and then open.
And
the door.
While we're here,
doors are terrible.
If you cut off your arm, you can't duct tape it back on.
Nah, come on. Like I always take offense when people are like, what do you mean, blah blah blah? This is a game with mold people. Like I can still get behind. Like just because a game has mold people doesn't make it immune to pointing out silly things in the game.
But I think the duct tape arm decapitation thing is something that has nothing to do with mold people. They just throw it in there, you have a watch on, you put duct tape, and you're good to go.
Yeah. Okay, so there's doors that
doors are terrible in games.
There's doors that are worse in Resident Evil games. Because you used to open a door
and then
everything would go black, and it would show stairs, and it would just go up one at a time.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, that's for suspense. It was a freaking loading screen.
Yeah, it's not for suspense.
It took forever. And also, I have a list I've just developed of top worst doors in games.
Top worst. Okay.
Yeah, okay. That's so we got the doors in the Fire Temple in Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate those doors.
You go up to them and you open one up and it's like, I'm not a door. It's like, wham!
Yeah.
Yeah, those are bad doors.
Those are in a few games.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I believe you fight a door in Final Fantasy that just turns into a big monster that you have to fight.
In which
Final
Fantasy?
I might be thinking of a wall.
What about the doors?
There's walls. There's the advancing walls.
See, it's hard to do topless on the floor.
What about the doors in Metroid Prime that shoot when you open them mostly?
There you go.
But also sometimes just stay still.
Yeah, the force field moves back, but then it doesn't open.
What about like still loading?
The original Prey or other sci-fi games that have all those butthole doors?
Oh, yeah, I don't like those doors.
Or like inside
Dead Space has one of those.
Yeah, butthole doors in Dead Space. And in Ocarina of Time when you're in the whale.
I read a thing. Mm. I read a blog post a couple years ago.
The Jabu Jabu belly doors. They're really creepy.
I hate those doors.
You have to shoot like a tonsil and then it opens.
I hate those doors. I read a whole thing, a blog post a couple years ago from a game developer about how doors are like the hardest thing to make in video games. See if I can find
How are the doors in Breath of the Wild?
Fine, except for they seem to shut at they shut in my face.
That totally happens to me
all the time.
When I go into someone's hut and I talk to them, and I'm like, okay, I'm done. And right as I'm going back out, it's like
they're timed exactly wrong. Like they leave the doors open for a while, I think, so that you can pop in and pop back out.
And
but
no
they seem,
loading at
they,
all.
Yeah, that's incredible. They seem to be timed exactly to shut right in Link's face.
Yeah,
I think the Blood Moon is hiding the loading in that game.
Really?
Did you know that this isn't in our list of 100 things? You can tell when a blood moon's coming because the whole day before, all the enemies' eyes will be red, and they're normally like green.
So
and Link just seems down.
Yeah, he's not doing well.
We have an email here from Tony in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Is it Big Tony?
Just Tony. Okay. This is just regular.
He
Tony.
Might be Big Tony. He might be a Big Tony. We don't
in
know.
His own
Tony. He's just identified himself as Tony from Greensboro, North Carolina. He emailed us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com, just like you can. He says, "Good afternoon, Damon, and everyone else at Gamescoop. I love your guys' work and look forward to the show every week. My question for you is this: With the excellent reviews and strong reception that Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild has gotten so far for the Nintendo Switch, I was wondering what your thoughts are on whether Nintendo will duplicate the same type of success for their other huge franchise staple that many Nintendo fans are waiting on, Super Mario Odyssey. Although he may not be as heavily involved anymore with the development of the games as he used to be, I can imagine Miyamoto and his team are hard at work to bring us another memorable experience with Mario. I can't wait to play Super Mario Odyssey later this year when I get my Switch. Love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, in the trailer, I mean, we're going to find out more at E3, but it's already clearly they're going back to, we talked about, I love that we predicted this on Scoop, that Mario's going back to its more exploration-oriented, like, bring the camera back down behind Mario's shoulder and more like the 64 and Sunshine, wide open spaces for Mario to explore. And you don't know, we don't know that much about Odyssey, but it's moving back in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, I think people get fatigued when they see this guy, right? Because they're kind of like, he's been in so many games. There's been so many 2D games, so many 3D games. There really haven't been that many. I mean, we've got Mario 64 and Sunshine were
the only ones in that style.
And like, Galaxy, like, full 3D.
Galaxy's dope. Like, that Galaxy's one of my favorite games of all time, but I'd much rather have this than Galaxy 3.
Yeah, like, Galaxy's the same way, where it's sort of like segmented areas. It's not really open world. You don't have that big, like, sort of castle hub or the Sunshine area hub where you're just on vacation, you can pop in at different levels. So this feels like it's doing that again. And if you think about it, in all the years we've had Mario, like 30 years now, this will only be the third game in that style. I mean, I adored 3D World. That's some of the hardest I've ever laughed playing a video game. Mm. But again, that's it's mostly a locked camera, focusing on multiplayer. Even the 2D stuff, like, we haven't had a real 2D Mario in a long time outside of Mario Run.
I mean,
and Mario Maker.
Yeah, they feel pretty different. Like, Mario, you know, they're all platforming focused, but like, Super Mario 64 didn't have any bricks in it, you know, didn't have any mushrooms in it. Like, it was a very, very different game. And
it had bricks, but they were weird.
Well, but not really.
Yeah, they didn't really
do
anything.
Like, and Mario World was very different than 1, 2, and 3. You know, Super Mario World was very, like, secret and puzzly. I don't know. Like, I feel like Mario has been very distinct and reinvented itself several times over the last 30 years.
But the secrets are what needs to come back in this game. Yeah. Mm. That's what I remember. I was reading the first review ever documented of Super Mario Brothers from the people that were in here to do the live stream, our Save Point live stream that are running the game history.
Stephen Lin and Frank Cipaldi. Yeah.
And they have this, like, they tweeted out an article which was like the first scan ever of Super Mario Brothers. And the person, like, it doesn't give it a perfect review.
Where's the review from?
It's from, like, since nobody was reviewing Nintendo games that early, for sure, it's from like a local college computer journal type thing.
Yeah.
So the person says, the thing they emphasize is how many secrets are in the game. It's like, oh, this is a really cool game because, like, it's really fun to explore everything and you want to break every block and see what's in it. And, like, that's what Zelda ended up being, is like the Mario type game with, like, they really doubled down on secrets and like, super. Same thing as Breath of the Wild, right? But I like Mario games like that because it includes platforming to get to crazy stuff that's like secretive. And man, the castle was the best part of Mario 64 because like, you can just explore that with jumping. Yeah. It's so exciting.
Yeah, and there were so many like cool stuff. Little weird nooks and crannies, and you walked over there. There was a rabbit with a star. There was a Yoshi on the roof. Spoilers. There was
the rabbits in the basement are really interesting. Yeah.
There's little toads that you can talk to, and every now and then one of them will give you a star. Like looking up at the sunshine, and that one level lets you fly.
That blew my
mind. Yeah, it's really cool. So I'm totally with you.
Yeah, discovering secrets in any game is like, that's my favorite thing. But Zelda's about exploration, which is different than Mario. Mario kind of explores an interior or a smaller area with like cool platforming and acrobatics.
While we're here, one of the things I definitely want to see come back that was in Mario 64 along those same lines and was originated in Mario World was the idea of like beating a level where you can hit a switch that would turn on a certain type of block throughout the entire world.
Yeah,
right? In Mario World, you hit the yellow blocks from that one like yellow palace and all of a sudden they're everywhere.
Yeah, the three
and
you have switch a reason palaces. To go back to older stuff and be like, what did I change?
And find new stuff.
It's a kind of Metroidvania element.
I really want alternate exits because that was really cool in Mario World and some of the other Mario games. Being able to like...
out of there and all out.
Yeah, playing levels completely different. Like some of the underwater levels in Mario World where you could just go under the level and finish it a different way. Stuff like that's
and
awesome.
And the stars are kind of did that with levels, right? They're like, here's five ways to play in this playground.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was a great idea. Maybe it's time for something different than the five stars and like to tie it to,
do you guys think that this is going to feel like a reinvention on the same level that Breath of the Wild is?
How cool would that be?
Well, that's what I wanted to say. So when comparing Odyssey and Breath of the Wild, two things occur to me. Odyssey seems to be going back to a more familiar 3D Mario that we miss. Whereas Breath of the Wild is taking Zelda in a totally new direction. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going back.
I think it went back to the first game.
Except it feels even so much more open-ended and exploratory than even the first Ocarina of Time or the first Legend of Zelda.
I think it's exactly the same as Legend of Zelda on that level.
Well,
just the tools are different.
Except that,
I get your point. I mean, it hasn't been like that since that game.
I mean, doing dungeons. So is that really Zelda? Stuff. Like the freedom to truly go up, down, left, or right. Sure, like that's very evocative of the first game, but it is doing something new with the confidence in its physics and chemistry.
Yeah,
system.
It's also
definitely
what
doing
it's
a
doing,
lot new.
What it's doing for open world games, even if you just ignore anything else that Nintendo's done, has set the bar so high. Like the ability to climb everything, everywhere, makes even going to something like Horizon. Which you can't really do that.
You get stuck behind a mountain when you go back.
Constantly.
To play Horizon.
Constantly. I mean, you feel like you're on a film set a lot of the times in Horizon because there's just a backdrop that you basically like bunny hop up, but you feel like you're faking it or glitching it.
But it looks amazing.
It looks really good. But I think that like if you're making an open world game now and you can't climb everything in it.
That's why,
Yeah, so, Red Dead would be really good with climbing.
Yeah.
Mario has always been about the joy of moving Mario about in that space. It always just feels good to play. And Breath of the Wild is the first Zelda game that sort of matches that feel for that franchise, I think. Like, just the maneuverability in that game and moving Link around and the combat. It's the good first point. Time Zelda has really felt good in the same way that Mario does. Because, like,
that's
Link
really
used to not
true.
Even be able to jump.
And his sword was terrible.
Yeah.
Like, Link was, like, super limited in the original Legend of Zelda games. And in Zelda 2, even more so. Like, it's kind of crazy. Like, you play Castlevania and you can, like, whip at least as long as your character is tall. And Zelda, you always...
Like, but next now, like, even if I'm not doing anything productive in Breath of the Wild, it's still a joy just to run around that world and explore
and
feel the controls.
Glide into somewhere new.
Yeah.
See what's jumping up. With the top button is a little bit weird.
But that feeling,
I got used to it real fast.
That feeling you're describing is what I think Mario's always been fantastic too, right?
Even from Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah. And especially you look at something like Mario 64, you could just run in circles around that courtyard, triple jump, backflip. Yeah. Like I want more acrobatics along those lines. Like Mario 64 felt like playing like what it's like to be Jackie Chan, you know? Like he's just like wall jumping and just like he's completely acrobatic. Yeah. And I want that feeling of freedom back. I want like the timer gone. I don't want any of that stuff. I want the ability to be like, you put me in New Donk City, that dumb new level that they have, which looks so much fun. And I want to be able to get up the side of a building differently than anybody else can. Because I think having those stories of Breath of the Wild, like how did you solve this puzzle? How did you do this thing? And everyone's got a different approach to it. I kind of want that in Mario.
You know, it's as freeing as the climbing is just the gliding in Breath of the Wild. Like, I love how you can, like, if there's a payoff for getting up really high, it's that you can see stuff that you need to get to, secret stuff, which is really cool, and then you can just beeline for it.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get shot out of the sky. Sometimes bad things happen.
But I like that you can, even if you're falling, you can just fast travel.
Yeah.
Out of that situation.
The way
you can in falling?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. You just get
you're losing combat.
That's new. Like games are usually like, you're falling, you can't fast travel.
Yeah. The way that I play the game now is I've uncovered all the towers. I have 66 shrines. It's 120 total. I pick a spot in the map where I don't have a lot of shrines, and then I go to the nearest tower, then just paraglide in that direction and see what I find. And I'm gonna run out of things to do soon-ish, but I probably have 4 or 5 evenings left of being able to still just fill in sort of the corners of the map that don't have a lot of shrines unlocked.
Yeah, and every time I think I'm like, oh, I've seen all the map, I head into some corner and there's a labyrinth or there's Eventide Island, which is one of my favorite sections in a video game. Have you guys done Eventide Island?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a canyon that I think most people just kind of paraglide over, but there's stuff down in it.
Yeah.
There's layers.
Yeah, sometimes the deepness of the levels are that the world is so amazing because I'm like always trying to get to the top of stuff.
Yep.
And then I get to an area where there's like a big canyon. There's like all this stuff down there. I'm like, I don't know if I ever want to get down there. How am I going to get out?
Yeah. Also, Ganon's castle on its own, like no matter which way I've approached that, and I haven't even beaten Ganon yet. I'm not trying to.
Just
I'm taking my time. But just going in the castle and just sort of rummaging around the basement or going into like the servants' rooms or it's just this huge labyrinth and there's treasures throughout all of it
so
and bosses
awesome.
And mini bosses you've never fought before.
It's a huge dungeon.
It's fantastic.
And impressive.
No spoilers, but you beat the game last night, didn't you, Justin?
Yeah, ending was great.
Awesome.
I was very satisfied. Like, it's hard. Like, it's a giant 100-hour adventure. Like, how do you end something like that? And, it was totally epic and interesting. I took a billion screenshots. I almost died because I was taking so many screenshots.
Just because it looked good?
Yeah, it's just it's not hard. I lost a billion hearts, but you know, I'm just shoving steaks in my mouth. That's fine. I didn't die once, but it's not hard, but it's very, very intimidating. It's very creepy, and the atmosphere is they really got it right.
Right.
If I had to recommend places to go next in Zelda that are not the main stuff, I'd say Mount Lanero, which is like
that's great.
A big snowy mountain with a really cool thing at the top. Eventide Island, which is like an incredible side quest on the coast. I won't say where.
Maybe the best.
And then I love the labyrinths. I really, really recommend people check out the labyrinth.
I actually really loved one, and the puzzle was very I couldn't figure it out, and then I had that light bulb moment where I'm like, oh.
Is it the one off the tech lab that you have to glide to?
I didn't do that one yet. I did the
That one's payoff is so cool because there's an additional thing. There's like a security area. Yeah, room of death. Sure. And it's really awesome.
I would recommend like one special Zelda thing. Go north of the Lost Woods. There's a little island north of the map and a really cool thing.
On the map, there's a cloud, so you can't see what it is. But
I actually love the southern coast along the beach. There's a town down there. There's a bunch of like wild horses.
Underrated town down there.
There's this woman who has like an ancient guardian fetish.
Yeah, and she's
like hugging this ancient
the one
guardian
with
ball.
The orb that won't let it go.
She's like, I just really love these things. Bring me pictures of them. And you're like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. Wait, that's not the jungle town. That's a different town.
She's just a lady who's just on her own because no.
I'm
town.
Just saying you're talking about a different. Oh, talking about a different town than the jungle one, though. Oh,
no, that's the jungle one. Yeah, okay. But near there, there's a like woman who no town will allow live.
Really?
Because she's insane.
I haven't seen that yet. That's so cool.
I made it to the Master Sword last night, but then I couldn't pull it out of the stone because I didn't have enough hearts.
That was a bummer. So basically, go everywhere and do everything. There's very few things in that game where I've been like,
more people need to get access to the game.
Yeah.
Because it's just a landmark game.
We kind of need to put more Switches out there.
But I hope people can buy it this Christmas and, get it. It's like,
I mean, it's totally going to be one of those games that we just talk about forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Really, really that.
I think people are going to be on that wiki, on that guide, on IGN for a very long time, finding stuff out.
It's good because Brendan Graber, rest in peace, killed himself writing that guide.
He definitely did.
It's just amazing. Amazing guide work.
Hey, listeners. Did you know you can rent video games from home with Gamefly? Their selection is over 9,000, and you can keep the games as long as you want. Unlike the weapons in Breath of the Wild. They offer movie rentals now, too. For a free 30-day trial of the premium service, go to gamefly.com/scoop with an exclamation point. The proper spelling of scoop. Now you know, and knowing is half the battle. Game Scoop!
The next email is from Ronimal from the ATL. And he says, Ronimal, he says, think Danimal yogurt. But it's spelled Ronimal with an O-N. So I'm going to go with that.
Got it.
He says, around the end of last year, I picked up Gears of War 4 and The Witcher 3 during one of those Black Friday sales. I enjoyed both, and The Witcher 3 deserved all the hype ever. It may be my new favorite game of all time. Something that I've wondered, though, is Gears of War 4 had a single-player campaign of 8 to 10 hours. Witcher 3, if you just did the main quest, was at least double that, but a regular playthrough has some big side quests you do as well. It got me wondering, why aren't there shooter campaigns that are longer? Is that the reason AAA RPGs are so few and far between? Because building all that content is a high-risk, low-reward proposition for a developer.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Why are shooter campaigns so short?
There are shooter open-world games.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Borderlands is big.
That's true. The Borderlands campaigns are really long.
They have to be made that way.
Well, you know? RPG campaigns are predicated on your character getting stronger and better. And there's some of that, you know, like, I'm sure, like, everything's an RPG now. So, like, in every shooter, you're, like, upgrading stats a little bit. But they're still not RPGs in the way that The Witcher is. And so that's what allows them to give you a feeling of progress. And as you progress through the map, you're seeing stuff. They're like, oh, I can't do that yet. I need to leave and come back. And a shooter campaign is just kind of missing that.
Well, it's also in predominantly multiplayer games, the completion stats for players of the single player campaigns are generally abysmal.
Yeah, I forget the stat. Battlefield 1, like only 10% of players finish the campaign. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. On like Xbox One, at least.
It's abysmal. And then it's like, I mean, that's a very vocal minority, right? Because there was like, we want a campaign. People with Titanfall 2, right? It's another thing where it's like, no one really bought that game. And the people who did, only percentage of them actually played through single player. Although you hear about how great it is from, again, the vocal minority. But when you look at the bottom line, a company is probably saying, well, why would we waste 2 years making this when... Yeah. We can just focus more on multiplayer and sell just as much. So It's tough, man. I mean, I prefer a good long single player campaign when I can, but
I didn't need any more of Gears of War 4.
I didn't. No, I didn't either. I think there's like a sweet spot with first person shooters in general, where it's somewhere between like 5 and 8 hours. If it goes overboard that, I'm kind of like,
yeah.
I'm a gigantic Gears of War fan, but and everyone insists that the second half of that campaign of 4 is better than the first, but I fought wave after wave of robots and then eventually put it down and played it.
I did the same thing. Yeah, and I felt really bad because I really wanted to get into it. I feel like I cover so much PlayStation stuff here at IGN and so much Nintendo stuff here at IGN, and I have an Xbox One Day One edition. I bought it the day it came out. I try as much as I can to fall in love with that console's exclusives when I can, and then that one came along and it just didn't connect with me in the same way the old ones did. Yep. And I tried, man. I gave it everything I could, but eventually I just walked away. I just got bored.
I can't remember having like a really good first-person shooter experience or third-person shooter experience single player recently.
I really liked Titanfall, but I really liked Infinite Warfare. And I'm not a Call of Duty fan.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you liked the campaign.
Yeah. Right? I totally liked the campaign. It's short. I thought the characters were interesting. I thought like the conflict was interesting. It didn't ever get like Call of Duty campaigns are all like, you know, kind of very repetitive, but it didn't really repeat a lot of ideas. It's a little bit nonlinear. You're like the captain of a spaceship and you get to choose like where you want to go. That's cool. And what you want to do. It's not like incredible, but I played through the whole thing and was like, oh.
Yeah.
I give Call of Duty a shot every 2 or 3 years and then never stick with it. But this one I stuck with and liked a lot.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm really excited for Battlefront 2 because specifically it's going to have a campaign in it. And that's, and, you know, as a Star Wars guy,
Star Wars campaign.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. Yep. You know,
I thought the Titanfall 2 campaign was really fun.
Yeah.
Not like, it's not on the level of like a Half-Life.
Dude, I'm totally with you. There were people who were like,
that's totally fun.
People were like, that's the best first person shooter campaign ever made. And I'm like, it's really good.
Oh, no, it's not.
But calm down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I still haven't played Doom. And everyone says Doom is really fun.
I last year's Doom. I
want to get to that sometime.
I didn't like it.
Yeah,
I know everybody else did. That's
yeah. I love the campaign in Perfect Dark, but that's a little bit different. It's like you can play that very slow and methodically, like a stealth game if you want.
I told
to.
You it's been a while since you played one. No, I'm just kidding.
It's almost it's like Perfect Dark. It's that style of shooter. Like it's almost more of like an adventure.
Yeah.
Are you talking Perfect Dark Zero or Perfect Dark?
No, Perfect Dark.
But yeah.
Perfect Dark Zero.
Yeah, Perfect Dark Zero I did not like. But
I
Perfect
played
Dark,
Perfect
I
Dark
a lot.
Again on
Xbox Live
in Rare Replay.
Oh, and Rare Replay.
I mean, yeah, but it's the Xbox Live Arcade.
That game
version.
Is still fun.
It's awesome.
Well, what
yeah.
it totally holds up.
What I love about that game is it's got this sort of like Mario 64 vibe to it, where you can basically go in and beat the level, or you can go in on harder difficulties and play to your to your skill level. Like ticking on different criteria of things you had to do in GoldenEye and Perfect Dark. Like I don't know why that's not a thing we see in more first person shooter campaigns.
I really
where like scales that. To how difficult it is. There's more objectives. There's side roads you can go on.
I like games where you manage like some kind of weapon inventory and have to like really think about what you have all the time. And I feel like games like Titanfall and Gears of War, like, no, you're taking these, anything can kill anything, just walk through the game. And I don't like that very much.
I'm totally with you.
That's why, like, I think Half-Life, Portal, and Metroid Prime are like the best first person adventure games ever. And like, there's nothing that's living up to those games right now.
The next email says, my name is Anthony Schultz, and my wife and I are from Spokane, Washington, but are vacationing in Portland, Oregon for the week. Mm. Sam, a few episodes back, mentioned Ground Control in downtown Portland.
I've never been. I just hear it's cool.
As an arcade and bar worth checking out, so my wife and I made sure to hit it up, and we absolutely loved it. Thus far, we've been 3 evenings this week drinking and gaming to our heart's content. In essence, I wanted to give Sam a shout-out for recommending such a fantastic barcade, and was wondering if anyone on the panel had any other suggestions for similar places in the U.S. to visit.
Yeah. So Portland actually alone is probably the most dense arcade city in the country, right?
I don't know, because last month I was in Chicago, and now arcade bars are all over Chicago.
That's
like
there's
every
two
neighborhood.
Barcade locations in New York now too.
Yeah, there's one.
They're called Barcade.
Yeah, there's one on St. Mark's called Barcade, which is the old like punk rock tattoo neighborhood. That's totally different.
It's a chain basically.
Yep.
Now.
I was there.
They're
a couple
opening
ago.
The same owners are opening one here too.
Is that the one that's here on Market? Is it Barcade?
No, that's called Brewcade.
Brewcade, sorry,
it's not related. And like Brewcade's all right.
Yeah.
I don't think you need beer to make an arcade great now, but that's really popular. It's a, mm-hmm. it's a combination that happens.
Well, it's what's nice about it is that it keeps the kids out. Like, they're often not allowed to go. Like, a place that serves alcohol and doesn't serve food, they can't have kids in it after a certain mm-hmm. time of day. Like,
yeah, I mean,
I worry about the quality of the machines sometimes at bars.
Sure. Yeah.
And sometimes they have to really think about both. Yeah. It can't just be a bar that has 20 arcade games because they're always broken.
It's true. In a place we went to, Justin, in Chicago, Emporium, I went back there last month and I was disappointed. Like, a lot of the machines were just in terrible shape.
But
like,
the flip
we're hardly
side
working.
That's too bad because I hear Emporium is really great.
There's two locations in Chicago. One is bigger and better than the other one.
The evening we were there, though, I mean, I don't know how you were doing. I was in rough shape and.
In good shape.
Yeah, I was in very good shape. And I was very happy to just put some quarters in Rampage. Like, I'm not even sure all the buttons were working. I didn't care. Like, Sam's point that, like, you want to have your machines in good condition, but there's also an argument to be made where you're just going to putz around and put some money in something and not care that much.
Yeah, and pinball's different than both those things because, like, they have to be in good shape.
They have to work, yeah.
I have two really high-end recommendations. One is 82 in downtown LA. It's just awesome. Everything about it's great. Great game selection. Some of the rarest games. They have an environmental disc of Tron, which you get inside. I've never seen that anywhere. All the new pinball machines, it's really awesome. And then they have an upright Duck Hunt machine, which is a versus cabinet, which is just super hard to find. Like, it's you'll never see it anywhere. Good Nintendo stuff. And then, of course, in the Bay Area, like, absolutely go to Free Gold Watch. It's the best arcade. It is so awesome. It's like 70 games. It's everything's in good shape. I operate games there, full disclosure. And it's really great. It's right behind Amoeba, and it's just awesome. You can bring your own beer.
It's a very cool spot, yeah.
It's beautiful, too. Mm. It's super cool.
Yeah, they're all over the place now.
Yeah,
I wish I would have had that in my early 20s.
No kidding.
I know, right?
And those games were only half as old as they are now then.
Yeah.
They would have been in even better shape.
We had Replay Lounge in Lawrence, Kansas.
Yeah, so I recommend the Replay still. It has four games in Lawrence, Kansas, and it's awesome. It's a pinball-themed bar. It's great.
All right, time to play Video Game 20 Questions.
Oh my
gosh. Actually had a controversial or a thought-provoking question posted to me on Twitter today. The question was, if the game were RoboCop and the question were, do you play as a human, what would I say? And I was like,
oh, man.
I don't know.
You get stumped all the time with questions.
So I put the call out, and I got like half and half responses, people saying yes and no.
I think RoboCop is more robot than man.
But
I think he's more.
I think I've been a little.
The point of the story, isn't it?
I think I've been a little too strict on my answers. Looking up some 20 questions rules, it seems that like sometimes or maybe are acceptable answers. So maybe I should be a little more.
Mm. We're screwed.
Yeah, we're in real trouble.
So maybe I should answer maybe on some of the questions like.
Oh my gosh, that would be horrible.
Well,
all right.
Anyway, let's. This week's question or suggestion comes from Billy.
All right, Billy.
And let the questioning begin.
One of the characters in Double Dragon.
Yes. Bimmy, actually.
Yeah.
Is it Bimmy?
Bimmy and Jimmy.
Bimmy and Jimmy in the original. Do you collect and spend currency in this game?
No.
Can you see your hands?
No.
You guys. Does it have a multiplayer mode?
We're way into the weeds.
Yes.
You can't see your hands.
That's correct.
That's actually kind of an incredible. That means that it eliminates every 2D game.
Yep. And
every third person game.
And pretty much every first person game.
And many first person games.
Maybe a pause.
Ooh. Hooves.
Oh yeah.
Did this game come out before January 1st, 2000?
Yes.
Was this game exclusive to one platform?
No.
Did it come out before 1990, January 1st?
Yes.
Good.
Good.
This is an 80s
good.
Game.
Could be a text adventure. I always feel like Damon's going to try to pull one of those over on us.
This is a multiplayer. This is a non-exclusive multiplayer.
Oh, was it multiplayer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Non-exclusive multiplayer text
mode,
adventure.
He had to look it up.
Where could be a mud.
Where you don't collect anything and you can't see your hands.
Can't see your hands is really going to trip me up.
Non-exclusive.
Why?
Because, well, like, that eliminates almost every game.
That's why we ask it.
That eliminates every game where you can see your character.
Unless you have hooves.
So what? So, like, Battlezone, maybe? Like, what was the tank game? Was that Battlezone?
Yeah.
With the vector graphics?
I mean, it's also
but it's not
Tetris,
I mean, you can play two players in it. But.
Yeah, so do you play as a character? Like, are you a person? Do you play as a character in this game? Do you play as a character?
Do you play as a character?
Yeah, do you play as a character? You're not a character in Tetris.
Okay, then yes.
A handless character. A fish, maybe.
Ooh.
Do you play as an animal?
Echo the Dolphin.
90s.
No, 80s game.
The question is, do you play as an animal? The answer is no.
Fudge.
And it's a multi-platform game?
It is not exclusive to one platform.
Oh, man.
Hey, did it come out on the NES?
Yes.
All right, that'll help a lot.
Yeah, I was thinking PC.
And it came out on multiple systems, so it's just helpful that it's out on NES. But tons of stuff got ported. But I know that library really well, so that helps.
I like
me.
Yoshi's Cookie. Does he have hands?
Was this game developed in Japan?
Yes. Ooh, that's man. 10.
Okay, we're halfway there. Japanese NES game, non-exclusive, with multiplayer, where you can't see your hands or collect anything.
Released before January 1st, 1990.
Rampage.
So like a racing game maybe? I was thinking like RC Pro-Am, but that was made by Rare. But like something like that?
Mm.
Yeah, or like off-road racing or something like that.
Yeah.
Excitebike.
But that's not multi-platform.
Games. You see there? Oh, it's yeah, not. You
can,
well,
and
you
no, can we didn't games. Ask.
Are you
it's a driving game.
Are you in some kind of vehicle or ship?
Yes.
Woo!
Oh, okay. So
Gradius.
It could be Gradius, like, Life Force.
All of those.
Stinger.
R-Type might be too new.
You guys went straight to shooters, but we were on driving games, and those are equivalent.
It's supposed to be a driving game.
I'm just trying to think about how many Japanese driving games there are.
Well, is this a sci-fi game?
No.
Man, so that eliminates everything we just listed.
That's the whole point. You want to eliminate everything you just thought would be drowned.
That's a good question.
This is a really good one.
Yeah, I mean, okay, is this a driving game?
No.
But you're in a ship that's not sci-fi.
So it could be like Afterburner.
Yeah, it could be like what's the one I was just picturing? 1942.
Mm-hmm. Is it a flying game?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Does it take place in World War II?
Yes.
Okay. So does it take place in 1942?
No.
Does it take place in 1943?
Yes.
Yeah. 1943.
Yes, 1943, the Battle of Midway.
How many questions was that?
13.
Oh, wow.
You usually don't like to do sequels.
Yeah, well, that was the suggestion. This
Ooh, that's such really a tricky tough. One.
Yeah.
It's good.
Released what if you had said 1942 and we were just like, oh, man, we're walking away from this
we
one.
Could have.
Yeah.
We could have.
Developed by Capcom, released in arcades in 1987, but that came to everything.
Great has there game. Never been a 1944?
No. Oh, there's no. Well, I don't know if there's.
There's sequels.
There's sequels like 1940XX.
Yeah, but there's never been a 44.
I don't think they did 44, but they did several sequels.
What a great game. I love the EA giant the airplanes that you have to slowly like.
Yeah, isn't that a great concept that it's like, you know, like a more difficult airplane to fight? Bigger.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
Just make them bigger.
And what's interesting is that it's a Japanese developed game, but you're playing as an American pilot, you know, fighting against the Japanese forces. So
I guess I never thought about that.
Odd in that respect.
Did they change it in Japan?
I don't, not to my knowledge.
Or are you fighting against like some like anonymous?
Yeah.
I don't know.
The plot description. Propaganda when we were kids.
It is.
The plot description from the.
Well, that one's the Battle of Midway for 1933. Yeah. 1943. Yeah. So that's.
Yeah, I've never given that an ounce of thought. That's a little awkward.
I think some of the sequels get more a little more sci-fi with like bizarro like spaceship planes that you have to fight against with lasers and stuff. It's cool. That's a really cool series, especially the later ones that came in the 90s are very impressive in the arcades. 1943. Thank you for the suggestion, Billy. And I think that's all the scoops that we have for you this week. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Sam. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop. And we're out. We'll be right back.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.